With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome to Loud and Lifted, the podcast where we don't just talk about women supporting women. We dig into the real stories behind the strength, the scars, and the sass. I'm your host, Betsy Hamm, and today I'm excited to chat with Julia Arpag. Julia is the dynamic founder and CEO of Aligned Recruitment. Julia transformed a challenging setback into a thriving, values-driven tech recruitment firm. She's continued to scale, all while staying true to her values of integrity, faith, and service. We're going to dig into Julia's journey from uncertainty to entrepreneurial success, offering insights in building a business that aligns with personal values. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or navigating career transitions, Julia's story is a testament to resilience and purpose-driven leadership. Let's get loud and lifted with the unstoppable Julia. Julia, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Betsy. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, you have a few things going on. So I love that you still take time to have an amazing LinkedIn schedule of posts, but then also do podcast. I don't know how you do all of it.
It's my pleasure. Honestly, this stuff is fun. I love it. I'm happy to be here.
Nice. Well, I'm sure any podcast you do starts with your story of the shock of how you got into your current career. So if you want to take us back a few years to how you decided to go from a steady job working for another company to starting your own thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, my story is a crazy one. So I was laid off 5 weeks postpartum with my fourth son. So I have two foster sons who are 14 and 15. They moved in when I was 6 months pregnant with my first biological son. And then my second biological son was born in July of 2023.
So wait, we just have to make sure people caught on to that. You were 6 months pregnant with your first baby. Yes. And you decided to foster two, what were they, probably
older,
10?
They were 10 12. And 11. Yeah,
okay. Two older boys. 10 and 11 year olds. So you went like from a quiet house to...
We went from zero to three overnight. And actually they're older. So they have a half sister who lived with us for a year too. So yeah, it was crazy. I'm not going to lie to you. It was crazy. If I'd known, I think God intentionally doesn't show us the future because we'd all be too afraid if we knew what would happen. But yeah, we just felt like, oh my gosh, there are kids out there who need homes. Obviously older kids are really hard to find homes for. So it just broke our heart. So yeah, we opened up our home. It got real crazy, real fast. So then fast forward to 2023, we've had those three boys, my first biological son and our two foster sons for about 2.5 years. Then we have our fourth son, and then I get laid off 5 weeks later. My CEO, I really don't hold this against him because he called me and he was like, listen, like I'm laying off the entire team. I haven't paid myself a salary in months. Like he's like, there's just no money. Like I can't conjure money out of thin air. So I truly like... Do not hold it against him. Like, sure. I'm not mad at him. But it was definitely
like, your timing could have been a little different.
Yeah, I was definitely like, okay, this puts me in a tough situation. The good news is, though, I had already been for about a year considering what it would look like to go out on my own. Because recruitment, you can do it from anywhere. If you have the people skills, you can be very successful. And I had been very successful. I've been a tech recruiter for about 6 years now, six, seven, something like that. And so I was like, I could do this. Like I could totally, I've been the top performer in every team I've been on. I was like, I got this. So I was already thinking about it, but then he laid me off and I was like, okay, now seems like a good moment. But it also
seems like a scary, my decision.
But it also seemed like a scary moment because I was like, wait, like I kind of like having a salary. Like, that's right. Kind of nice.
Consistency is nice.
Yeah, right. So a couple of my former clients actually reached out when they heard I got laid off, and they offered me jobs at their companies, which was awesome. So I actually took one. I literally took one. And I was like, great, thank you. Yep, done. But my former co-founder also offered me a, you know, she was like, just come help me build aligned recruitment 5 hours a week, nothing crazy, just need your expertise, almost like more in an advisory capacity. I was like, sure, that sounds great, no problem. We get like a month in and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. Like, I would way rather run my own business and not work for someone else. So I told that client whose job I had accepted, I'm so sorry, but I've just got to move forward with this. And he was like, no problem. Let me become your next client. So they literally we had two clients by then. He became our third client. So it was such an incredible transition. I could not have asked for it to go better. And then even better, honestly, about, 8 months later, I bought out my former co-founder. Because again, we just came from different worlds, right? Like, she was strong operationally, but I knew recruitment. I learned sales. I brought in 99% of our revenue. And I was like, no offense, I don't really need you. Like, I'm just gonna go ahead and do this on my own. So she's been gone for about a year and I totally stand by that decision. It's been such a blast. So yeah, that's what brings us to current day. We've been running the business for about 20 months and we're just at about $1 million in revenue. So I'm very grateful, very excited.
Amazing. In less than 2 years.
Less than 2 years, yeah.
That's wild. And how confident were you in your decision? Or was it that it just kind of continued to build that you're like, okay, this is picking up steam? Or were there moments where you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I have four mouths to feed.
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. There were a lot of moments like that. So yeah, like I said, I was so unconfident in the decision at first that I thought I would just do it a couple hours a week and have a full-time job on this, like in addition to doing this on the side. So definitely unsure initially. When we hit such early traction though, and I was hitting my financial goals basically immediately, I was like, oh, maybe I can actually do this. And so that confidence has grown as I've shown myself what I'm capable of. So obviously there are still months that have lower revenue than other months. So those months are scary. But I keep coming back to, I know I can do this. I have the track record to prove it. I know God is with me, like what, and whatever that looks like, right? Like, I'm very open-handed in my life. I'm like, if God continues to bless the business, awesome. We'll keep going in this direction. If not, great. I'll follow him in a different direction. But it's been a very stretching experience not having that stable income and really having to fight for it every month. It's made me even more intense than I was before, to be honest, which I didn't think was possible.
You didn't think you needed to do.
Yeah. So I honestly, whenever I am like, man, this is tough, my executive coach and I laugh about, sometimes we both just longingly look at the people who work at Trader Joe's, like bagging groceries. And we're like,
they're so happy.
That'd be an awesome job. Right?
And they're always happy. Every time I've ever been in a Trader Joe's.
Right. And I'm sure they get huge discounts on those amazing like peanut butter cups. Like, y'all, I've got it made. So there are moments like that where I'm like, there are easier paths to this.
Sure.
But ultimately, I value freedom and flexibility so much that that has really been my driver in the 2 years I've run the business.
Was it hard to have that switch from like the employee mindset, right, to being the boss, the entrepreneur, responsible for other people? I mean, how was that shift of a mindset?
So I did a ton of mindset work, like a crazy amount. So I had a lot of fear. I was like, man, I've never sold a thing ever, ever, not one thing to anyone ever. So I was like, the only way I'm going to make money is if I sell my recruitment services and get people to buy them. Like, it's so easy to hire someone. You're like, hello, would you like $200,000 to do a job for this person? They're like, yes, I would. That's so easy. Sales, like going to a company and saying, hey, can you please give me thousands of dollars to fill this role for you? That's a whole different ballgame. So I was terrified. I was very nervous. So I did a lot of mindset work around confidence and my value and my worth and my ability and the abundance mindset, like just the belief that there is so much opportunity and I'm just going to walk into it. Like, I don't have to go fight for scraps. I'm going to have more than enough. So really that shift was what I had to do to be successful.
I love that. And so when you say mindset work, like what does that entail? Like, what did that look like for you?
So I found a bunch of affirmation recordings on Spotify and stuff like that. But a lot of them I would resonate with like 4 or 5 of the statements and not the others. So I recorded my own. Like, I took my favorites from a bunch of different affirmations. I literally recorded myself saying them And I paid a guy on Fiverr like $20 to set it to like meditation music. And every morning, it's a 17-minute recording. Every single morning, I listen to it while I do my makeup.
And you still do this?
Yeah, girl.
I love this. I mean, I thought 2 years into this, like, yeah, I got this. I don't need to be.
Oh my gosh. No, mindset is every day. And you keep leveling up, right? Like right now I have a team of six. So it's very different to run a team than to be a solopreneur. It's very different to be a co-founder than to be a sole CEO. Like every new level up I've done for the past 2 years has required more affirmations, more mindset shifts, more like right now I'm reading the book, 10X is easier than 2X. Like I keep 10Xing every like month, basically. So I have to keep retraining my brain and re-coaching myself.
That's amazing. And you just mentioned a book. I was going to ask, is there any other tools or anything else you did beside the affirmation to help move you forward?
Yeah, I'm a voracious reader. So I read minimum probably four books a month.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you sleep? Because I'm catching up. Like, do you,
I do.
Like 20 minutes sleep? Like,
I sleep a comical amount. We can walk through my schedule in a second. But yes, okay. I sleep a lot. Like my friends all make fun of me because on Amazon, there's this banner that says, thanks for coming. Please leave by 9. That is literally my energy. Like okay. Every time we host people, we kick them out of our house at 9 o'clock. Like I'll start brushing my teeth and be like, bye. Like, I'm just like, nope, you're done. So yeah, I sleep a lot. I hear you. So another book I read that was very impactful, it's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And the idea is basically, we feel so rushed and so hurried because we're letting our phones fill every single spare minute of our day. That's so true. I have my phone in the other room as often as I can. I need it for a lot of the work I do. So it's not always realistic for it to not be with me. But when I log off at the end of the day, I put it in another room. When I sleep, it's in another room. I'm really trying to train myself to not check my phone between every activity I do because that really is a time suck. So I just have a handful of priorities every day and I just do them.
Well, let's talk about that because I think you have to have a good schedule and must be time management and you still are taking care of yourself and you're like taking care of your business, your kids. So talk us through how, and I hate saying, I never use the word balance because balance isn't real because that would mean everything's even and equal and that's not life. So how do you handle all of the priorities that you have?
Yeah.
That's keep your sanity. Question.
Yeah, right. Well, I never said I maintain my sanity. So. But I hear you. Like, how am I still here? Right.
Yeah.
So I have gone through so many iterations of my schedule. So we're 2 years in. I'll probably, if we do this podcast again in 6 months, I'll probably have a different answer for you. So I've gone through iterations where I woke up at 4:30 every morning. That worked for about 6 months until I got so exhausted I couldn't do it anymore. I've gone through iterations where I've worked like 10 hours a day. That didn't work. I have 4 kids. Right now, I'm in an iteration where I sleep until my kids wake up, which is usually 5:30 in the morning. So I'm still waking up pretty early. But my littles get up around 5:30. My 1 and 4 year old. So we get up, we play, we hang out. They both go to a Montessori day school. So I get them out the house. My husband drops them off at 8. And then from 8 to 10 is my me time. So from 8 to 9, I work out. From 9 to 10, I spend time with God. And then at 10, I hit the ground running with my work day. And my workday entails my number one priority. So like you said, LinkedIn marketing has been very effective for my business. So I make sure I put up a LinkedIn post every day. I make sure to send 15 sales touches per day just to make sure I'm keeping my pipeline going. I make sure that I'm interviewing at least two to four candidates per day just to keep my pipelines running. I do have recruiters and sourcers on my team as well. But for my personal desk, I make sure I always have interviews every day. And then I time block, like Mondays are for internal team meetings. Wednesdays are for client meetings. Tuesdays and Thursdays are for heads down work time and ad hoc sales calls. And then Fridays are for fun stuff like this, like podcasts, networking events, stuff like that. So by chunking out not only my hours, but also my days, that helps me actually focus on one kind of set of calls or responsibilities for that day. And then something I've just started doing the past couple of weeks is I log off at 3. So I now only work 25 hours a week. And the reason that's worked so far is number one, I have a great team. Number two, I flex that as needed. Like luckily I have flexibility. My kids can stay at school till 5 if need be. So I have that option if something does run late. But I think having that boundary makes it so I am ruthless with my prioritization. Like if I only have 5 hours a day to work, again, not checking my phone between stuff. I have a clear to-do list where I'm like, these are the must do priorities today. And I just bang it out. I just go from thing to thing to thing to thing.
So you are super intentional about every hour, literally, of your week.
Yes.
And what happens if you fall off your schedule?
I'm like, God dang it. I'm obviously disappointed, right? Like, yeah, I had this perfect schedule. Like, what? Yeah. Like, how am I going to stay on it? Like yesterday, for example, I went up to Atlanta. I live in the suburbs outside Atlanta. So I went up to the city to meet with a client. We had lunch. It was a good time. But obviously that eats up several hours of my day. So I didn't have time to do my typical sales activities or my typical candidate screening activities. So I'm like, that's okay. Like, not ideal, but I'll get those in another day. So basically I've tried to have the mentality of I'm in a unique position. I'll be honest. I don't know any other recruitment or any founders in general who have biological little kids, older foster kids, run their own business. Like, I don't know anyone else who's doing all these things. Yeah. So I don't really have a mentor or an example to look up to. So I've just really had to be really intentional with myself, with my walk with God. Like, I asked God a couple weeks ago in our prayer time, I was like, what would you have me do with my business? Like, I was very open-handed. I was like, in general, what would you have me do? And clear as day, I've just felt this sense of log off at 3. That's why I started doing this. And I was like, no, literally, I didn't do it, Betsy. I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm not, that's absurd. No, I'm not doing that. And then 2 weeks later, I was reading a devotional by a Christian entrepreneur. And she was just like, is there something God has called you to do in your business that he knows he's called you to do that you're not doing? And I was like, yep, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild.
So I literally just started doing this like maybe 2 weeks ago, the logging off three thing. And so I've really had to let go of if there were things that I wanted to get done that day that I didn't, like just trusting that I'm walking in obedience and I'm doing what I feel God told me to do. And then, like I said earlier, the favor will come. And whatever that looks like, I accept that. And I'm very grateful for the clarity of there's no one to tell me how to do this. So I have to tell myself how to do it. And I have to listen to God as I do it. And then I have to ruthlessly execute on that clarity that I receive.
And I love the boundaries piece, because I think especially if you work from home, right, it's really easy. Oh, even home, technology, whatever it is, it's so easy for everything to be so blurred and meshed together that we're multitasking to like a painful point where sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, am I paying attention to anything that's going on? Like, whether it's work or, you know, your family life, like you can only, I used to think I was really good at multitasking, but now I think it's like a negative
thing. No one's good at multitasking.
Yeah.
It's real. It's not a thing. We actually
it's not a thing.
Can't. Yes. We can only do a bunch of things badly. We cannot successfully multitask.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you just don't give it everything you have or your full attention. And yeah, I've caught myself doing that, especially when my kids were younger. Like, you notice when they're trying to do something or play, and now they're on their phones too much that they're older, but it's like just being present and being intentional about how you're spending time does make sense that you can shrink down your work week or make sure you're present with your kids. So I think that's great advice. And I'm sure you have days where it probably gets a little off track and there's always the next day.
Mm-hmm. Then I just get back on. Yep, exactly.
That's interesting. Let's talk about your why, because this is very cool to me. When you start your own company, you obviously get to make it that's around you and your values. And you have this front and center on your website, which I love. So talk to us about your why.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have a page on my website literally that just says our mission. And I go into, I'm very transparent about my faith. I'm very transparent that I'm a faith-filled entrepreneur, that everything I do in my life is because of my faith. And I'm a very mission-oriented person. So like I said, we've been foster parents for 4.5 years. That is something that has been radically important to me even before I married my husband. I just couldn't believe there were hundreds of thousands of kids who needed homes, and the vast majority of people aren't willing to give them the spare room they already have in their house. Like, that just blew my mind. So the moment he and I bought a house and actually had space for kids, we started the process to get certified. So my goal with being so transparent about our story is, number one, I think people think it's like an out there problem. It's not. It's a right here problem. And number two, I want to be clear that you can be a profit-driven entrepreneur. You can be a for-profit company and use your money to serve in some philanthropic way and make that something you discuss openly. So I'm very transparent on my website. I talk about our experience as foster parents. And then we've also started a ministry where we do house projects for single foster moms. We provide meals for foster families. We We have a 15 passenger van because we're a big road trip family. So we load up like a dozen moms and drive them down to Florida for this annual foster adoptive moms retreat. Like there's these things we do, because the reason a lot of people don't do this is because I think it sounds so scary. Like, oh my God, you want kids from hard places to like live in my house? Like, no, that's too hard. Sure. So we do everything we can to empower the people that have said yes to this really hard thing. We lead a weekly small group in our home on Wednesday nights. They were just here 2 days ago. And we just all sit out and have a glass of wine or a glass of whiskey. And we just chat. We're just like, what's good? What's bad? What's hard? What's ugly? How can we help? What do you need? What's going on? And then we just fill those needs as we can.
That is amazing. And again, back to like, are you sure you sleep? Like you didn't put that into your weekly schedule.
I know, right? Well, I never got past 3 o'clock. So past 3 o'clock is like this fun stuff, right? Like getting to hang out with my family, getting to have people over, getting to do this kind of service. So yeah.
That's amazing. And we were talking earlier, the fact that you have teenagers and you have little ones. I mean, you're in two different worlds, like the need and the expectations and their schedule and the time and what they have a need from you from a relation standpoint. I mean, that's a lot to be able to have to focus on two different worlds of kid age.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And it is different because our littles go to bed at 7:30. My 4-year-old's getting pushy about bedtime. So, 7:30, 8:00,
light out.
Whatever I can get them down. So then we do have some time with just the bigs to kind of check in. To your point, they'd typically rather play video games or be on their phones or go to their friends' houses. But we do have that chance to just kind of like check in with each age group of the home. And then, like I was saying earlier, I am so intense about my sleep. Like I know that there's no chance for me to be the person I want to be if I don't sleep. So our bigs stay up later than us. Like I'm in bed by 9 or 9:30 every single night. And we let them stay up. Like they don't have a bedtime, right? Like they just have to be off their devices, but they can stay up. I don't care if you're up all night, as long as you're like reading a book or like
go to school.
I don't care. Yeah, whatever. So that was a shift. Like when they first moved in, when they were 10 and 11, we were like, you have to go to bed at 9 because we have to go to bed at 9. But now that they're older, we're like, okay, like you do you, but we're going to go to bed. So how we've made it all work, to be honest.
So I think you personally have a great value system and you're living what you believe and being able to do it professionally and personally. So how do you instill that into your kids, whether it's the littles or the bigs? How do you, you know, make sure that they understand that? And it's obviously different at different ages, but how are you instilling that to the boys?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I think about this every single day. So the bigs, they came from a really hard background. Obviously, you don't end up in foster care because you have like model citizen parents.
Right.
So they themselves need so much that I've really balanced like emotionally, right? Like they're very emotionally broken, to be honest, by what happened to them. So I'm like, okay, how much do I press into like discipling you and showing you like now that you've come out of your trauma a little bit, like obviously it's a lifelong healing process, but you're in a different place than you were before you went into foster care. What can I do to help empower you to serve other people? Balancing that with like, they still have to do a lot of healing. Sure. So one way we figured out to do that, and this is an imperfect system, but we have Compassion International Kids. So it's basically a program where kids who live overseas and don't have financial resources, you can become like their pen pal and like their buddy. So we send, it's like a monthly amount that you send just to make sure you can cover basic necessities. And then you write them letters. So our two boys they each have like their own little pen pal and they just like write letters back and forth. So that's one way just to kind of show them like, yes, you have not had a great hand of cards dealt to you, but neither have these kids. And like, this is a way that we can serve these people. So that's one way. And then the other way, honestly, is they, especially the 15-year-old, he is so compassionate and kind. Like he comes home all the time and tells me stories. He's very outgoing. He's very well-liked. He's very popular. He tells me stories of hanging out with the kid in his class who has autism or the kid in his class who's in a wheelchair. Like he's very intentional about that. One of his best friends, a good friend of our family, one of their boys has autism and he's the same age as our foster sons. He calls him one of his best friends. Like our foster son is like, oh yeah, I love him. Like, and he's not like, oh, but he's kind of weird. He's like, no, like he appreciates people for who they are.
Sure.
So I think that's huge. Like I've really seen them just kind of make compassion their own and like in their context be something that they value. for my littles, my 1-year-old's a freaking lunatic, so I have no idea.
You have to have at least one.
I'm just trying to keep him alive, honestly, at this point. My 4-year-old is also extremely thoughtful. Like, I've noticed he's very much in the phase of, like, really trying to understand. Like, he used to ask why just because kids ask why, and now he asks why because he really is like, wait, what's going on there? Like, what's happening there? Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, being so close to Atlanta, we have a bunch of people who are homeless who live in Atlanta. So we drive around. My husband packed like hundreds of bags that have like food, information about local resources, water bottles, like cleaning supplies, toothbrushes, whatever. So we just keep those in our cars. And so whenever we pass someone, we're like, hey, like, would you like this bag? So my son sees us do that. So he's like, Right. Oh, why is that man there? Like, what's the story here? So we just explain, like, we just want him to understand, like, not everyone has the same resources. Sure. Not everyone has the same access. So those of us who have more than enough, we support those who have less than enough. And then the goal is, as much as possible, leveling the playing field in whatever ways we can. So those kind of like.
Absolutely. Just being a good example.
Yeah.
And that's things even at maybe not one, but at 4, he can understand and start, I think, starts to plant seeds as they grow of supporting and taking care of the people and helping however you can. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very cool. You talk about the faith, your values. Like, do you have any advice for women who maybe it's a little bit harder if you're in a big company, but how do you hold true to yourself? If you have any advice for women how to do that?
I do. Yeah. So for my whole career prior to this moment, I worked for other people who didn't share my same values. Right. So I definitely have thought about that a lot as an employee. As far as I know, I've been the only Christian in a lot of the teams I've been on, and I've been the only foster parent, I think, at every company I worked at before.
Good chance.
Right? Like, shocker, right? No one does this. But I think for me, I've just always been very honest. Like, I've never hidden who I am, but I've also been respectful. So now I have to do a ton of personal marketing and personal branding to sell, but I didn't before. So I wasn't like, you know, shouting from the rooftops, I'm a Christian and a foster parent. Everyone should do this. Now I tell my story because it's just part of my story as a business owner. But basically, I just have always tried to be very relational. One of the offices I used to work at, I had to be in office 4 days a week, which drove me crazy. I'm a huge fan of remote work. I thought that was the dumbest policy ever. But I did it, and I put verses up on my wall, like Bible verses, just to remind me, like, I am a child of God. Like, I am not an employee. Like, I'm not. My first priority is not to be your employee, not even to be a wife or a mom. My first priority is my obedience to God, just to remind me, like, no matter how stupid I think this rule is, like, I am to act with excellence, integrity, honor, kindness, goodness, grace, like all those kinds of ideas. So I think no matter what your values are, they're more about how you act, not about what you say. So it's always possible to infuse your work with the character values that matter to you.
That's great advice. That's a great point. So I have to ask you, as a recruiter that you've spent, you know, years of your life doing, what do you see that women can do better when they're going for another job or trying to change a career? So is there anything that you see that you're like, wow? And I don't know how much you're dealing with women in tech. I can be super stereotypical and assume it's a lot of male in the tech industry, but just as a recruiter, what do you see?
Yeah, I would have to look back at my numbers to pull this for sure, but I really think about 50% of the candidates we've placed have been female. So that is a very relevant question. It takes some digging on our part, right? Like, sometimes I tell my sourcing team, like, for this week, let's only focus on female candidates, because to your point, male candidates are much more present in tech. But I think my best advice for a woman looking for a job is do your research, like, find out what the worth is of the job that you're going after and ask for it. Like, that is, for me, that's a non-negotiable. Like, I hate when I see people, and I get it. If you've been laid off and it's been 6 months and you just have to keep the lights on in your house, like, okay, that's a different situation. But if you're in a position where you can ask for top dollar, do ask for top dollar. And then even when they offer it to you at the end, I would ask for more personally, honestly. That's what I always did as an employee. Like, whatever offer they came to me with, I was like, awesome. And then I would ask for typically like 10% more on the offer they gave me. I never got it, but I would get like 5% more or 3% more, right? So, like, there's no reason not to ask. And if you do it respectfully and kindly, even if they say no, there's no negative to that, right?
Sure.
You don't know if you don't ask. My favorite sentence is, don't say they're no for them. So always ask, always put it out there, always try. If they say no, who cares? You're in the same position you were anyway. But if they say yes, you're in a way better position.
And sometimes it's just on the approach, right? Like me being in the CEO end in the past and people negotiating, I learned a lot by how others negotiated, good and bad. But, you know, there was, it, to your point, it's the ask. And you can be, I don't want to say casual about it, but you can have a great approach about it that you're not feeling like you're attacking the company or the HR person. So, you know, I think a lot of times it's just the positioning, the approach, this is my value. And hey, if I get 5%, I asked for 10, I wanted 5, that's better than 0. But I do love the fact that you have to ask, because I realized actually how terrible I am at negotiating on the other side of the table through the year. So I'm like, man, I should have definitely pushed back every time. I'd be like, okay. Now I'd be like, okay, great. Thanks. Yeah. You know, that was sort of the response. Like I was grateful or thankful. I don't know. So yeah, I realized I've through the years, I definitely could have been a better negotiator, especially in those early days where it was just, you didn't know better and thought what they offered was it. And that's certainly not the case. Yeah. But.
And the best book I've ever read on negotiation is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. He was an FBI hostage negotiator. So he's coming from like the freaking trenches.
Oh gosh.
But it applies so well to business. I read that entire book in like a weekend because I was like, this is going to change my life and my business. That's how I bought out my former partner. That's how I've negotiated all my client contracts. That's how I've negotiated all the employees I've brought on my team. Whenever one of my candidates does negotiate the offer I give them for another client, that book helps me have that conversation. So if anyone listening to this feels like you, where they're like, I'm just not good at that, like, okay, learn. Go read a book. Do it.
I'm literally going to order that today.
Yeah, please. Literally about to, like, go order it. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Could always improve a negotiation.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I feel like we could get advice from you for the next couple hours, but we know you have a schedule to keep. So any other last advice, parting words? I think you are just doing so many amazing things personally and professionally. So congrats to you. But any other parting advice for our listeners?
Thank you, Betsy. Yeah, I just think the number one thing you have to do before you execute is you've got to get clarity. So something I do, I didn't even mention this, but I also have a once a month calendar block where it's just my monthly reflection and planning. And so I have to have time to be quiet and just be like, okay, what do I need in this next month? What does my business need? What does my family need? What does my husband need? Like you cannot live a thoughtful life if you don't have time to think. So you have to give yourself time to think before you can execute.
That is amazing advice. That's going to be one of our highlights. I know it. That is so awesome. Julia, thank you so much for being here. And if you could come over and help me schedule out my next couple weeks, that would be awesome.
Yes,
I love your blogs every day. So thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Huge thanks to Julia for showing us what it looks like to turn rock bottom into a launch pad. For reminding us that power doesn't come from titles. It comes from knowing who you are, what you value, and not apologizing for either. She's proof that you can raise babies and raise the bar. You can pray, profit, protect your peace, and still be one of the fiercest ones in the room. If you love this episode, share it with a friend who needs a little push, a little pep, and a little permission to design a life she actually wants. Until next time, stay loud, stay lifted, and stay true to who you are.